Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order and get started right away. On our agenda with Senate File 2529, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Chamberlain, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I have a kind of a tricky maneuver you'll have to help me with here. I do have an author's amendment.
We're going to need a quorum before we can actually adopt that, Senator
okay.
Chamberlain. But.
Shall I just explain what we have here
it's
in the building?
The
yeah.
It's the
Mr. Chair and members, A1. What we have in the bill here, this was brought, I think, last week. And the reason it's a little late is because the folks that this impacts just realized it. It's requesting a fuel tax exemption for medical service providers, home health care, adult daycare facilities, people provide those services. What's happened is that they believed over the years they were entitled to a refund under the fuel tax code 296A07. So the DOR came across something and determined that these vehicles, this particular service was not covered in the exemptions under 297A07 or 08. And as such, they became liable for taxes, not only going forward, fuel taxes, but also past taxes. And what they had been doing, obviously, if you're familiar with how it works, is that they apply for refunds for the fuel tax they use, for the fuel tax, I think, on a monthly basis. Then they get refunds from the DOR, from the Department of Revenue. But because there was an oversight in the definition, and they didn't fit the definition for exemptions and entitled to the refund, they are now liable again, like I said before, for taxes going forward and for past taxes. Well, these are government, for the most part, these are group homes and other organizations that provide services to the disabled and other people. And they're getting taxpayer money as it is through Medicare, Medicaid, and other services. And so for them to take this hit is quite a drastic hit, and then to have to pay money from past years would be even worse. So we're shuffling taxpayer money around and actually harming them. So what we have here is a bill to include them in the exemptions for the fuel tax and allow them a refund. So it took longer than I wanted, but I'd like testifiers to give a brief overview if we could.
Before they do that, can I need to ask a question.
Sure.
Does this does your bill then eliminate the ability on the part of to go back and collect prior year's taxes or something
no.
like that?
No,
that,
Mr.
Is that still an issue that they can go and collect back taxes under this?
Mr. Goodnow, was that your
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Goodnow, I represent the Minnesota Rehabilitation Coalition. They would still have that ability, but I think if we can address this issue going forward, we can work with the department on that issue.
Okay. You've had discussions, Mr. Goodnow, on that.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Department of Revenue has been very understanding and helpful in trying to figure out how to reach a solution in this issue.
Okay. Thank you. Your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Wayne Barker. I'm the executive director of Merrick, Inc., a day training and habilitation provider located in Badness Heights, serving over 350 adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities by providing pre-vocational supports and life enrichment services. It seems that most everybody agrees that the original intent of this legislation some 20 years back was to not apply a state sales tax to taxpayer dollars being used to provide necessary services to recipients of Medicaid services. And that's exactly what Merrick is providing here. Of the 350 people we serve, about 50 of them are able to use MTC, Transit Link, and Metro Mobility, which are excellent resources for them. The other 300, however, have behavioral, medical, or other characteristics and disabilities that would not permit them to use public transportation. So we're filling in that gap to provide that transportation, again, using tax dollars to provide that service. And it's my understanding that DOR does not oppose this legislation. This is really extending and clarifying and updating the original legislation to include service providers that have evolved over the course of the last 20 years. And so I would ask your support of this legislation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barker. Mr. Goodnow.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, my name is Kevin Goodnow, here representing the Minnesota Habilitation Coalition. The Minnesota Habilitation Coalition is a trade association that represents a number of day training and habilitation providers. Those are folks that provide day services to people with developmental disabilities. Part of the requirements of a DTNH, day training and habilitation provider, is they provide door-to-door service to their clients. And they're pretty much almost exclusively funded by government. There's a few percent, you know, once in a while there's an occasional private pay, but for the most part it's 100% paid by the Medicaid program through the waived services. The issue in the past and where they have been taking the exemption is that there are people exempt, that providers exempt under the current gas tax because they're providers under 256B specific provision. Those providers provide similar services to similar type of people. Our funding stream for Medicaid comes through a different pot, and I won't get into Medicaid policy with you. I know there's a reason why you're on the Transportation Committee and not the Human Services Committee. But all we're looking for is to be treated in a like circumstance like those other providers. And so we'd appreciate your support for the bill, and we think it's good legislation for
you. We do have a quorum. We can go ahead and adopt the A1 amendment. Senator Howell moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. With the inclusion of the A1 amendment, Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this just clarifies and tidies up the language a bit. That's all. Same chapters. The meaning doesn't change, but it's a little bit clearer as far as who's impacted and how it's going to work. Describes them more clearly. Mr. Chair, it is language that DHS uses. I would know that because I don't work on DHS with DHS, but it's the language they use.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Senator Sharon, do you have a question?
Is it time for an amendment? Are you prepared for an amendment, or do you want to continue to have discussion for a while?
We have time for an amendment.
Great. I'd like to offer the A3 amendment. And then I have an amendment to the amendment. So if you'll help me figure out how to do that in the proper order, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's get the A3 amendment passed on.
So, Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to offer the A3 amendment with an amendment at this point?
Why don't we go ahead and adopt the A3 amendments? Senator Sharon moves the A3 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. If you would like to
and
offer
then the amendment to the amendment is on page 3, line 3.17. Or 3.16 and 3.17. In line 3.16, remove the term retroactively, and on line 3.17, change the date to July 1st, 2012.
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senators, I would suggest on 3.17 after made insert, delete after and insert on, or no, before, after, insert on or, sorry.
On or after.
Ms. Berzofsky, could you clarify that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. On 3.17 after made insert on or.
After December, or July.
So that it takes effect July 1.
Okay. That's the intent.
January 1, you mean.
Members, Senator Sharon offers
the January
verbal amendment to the A3 amendment. On line 3.16, remove the word retroactively. And on 3.17, strike December 31st of 2010. And add, and before, after, add on or, and then after the word after, July 1st, 2012. Boy, I made a mess of that. But so it would read purchases made on or after July 1st of 2012. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. Discussion on your amendment, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and I want to thank the author for this opportunity. The first language of the amendment has already been authorized by this committee. It relates to the federal qualified health care centers that purchase vehicles and transition them into to mobile units that are similar to other units like ambulances that do not pay motor vehicle excise tax. That amendment has already been in front of this committee. It simply is reincorporated here. And the second part joins Senator Chamberlain in terms of allowing these federally qualified health care centers that are servicing people that have no health insurance or very low-income persons to bring services to them and allows them to the same benefit that we're talking about in relief from gas tax. That simple.
Ms. Boyd, do we have anything on the fiscal impacts? This is, I would imagine, starting to add up to some degree.
No, there's nothing, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is a very preliminary revenue estimate attached with the underlying bill with Senate File 2529, and I can speak to that if I can find it in my papers.
Well, Ms. Boyd, we don't have that out.
We do not have that, no. There's not been an official revenue estimate, Mr. Chair, issued yet for this. What we have is an email from the Department of Revenue estimating at this point very preliminarily that $2.5 million a year, there'd be a $2.5 million a year reduction to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund from the gas tax exemption. We don't have any numbers yet for Senator Sharon's amendment. For the first part, I should say, joining the gas tax. For the second part, we did have a revenue estimate for the exemption from the motor vehicle sales tax, but changing the effective date zeroes out that revenue estimate. So, Mr. Chair, I assume that the first part of this amendment will bring us to tax committee, and we'll certainly have a revenue estimate before then.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
May we address the fiscal note issue?
Please do, Senator Chamberlain. We would very much appreciate that.
I'll say a word or two, then I'll let the testifiers mention something. They have not, these organizations have been getting this refund all along. And as we know how, so the real effect of this is going to be net zero because they'll just continue what they've been doing, getting the refund. But, of course, the way fiscal notes go, statute and practice, is they have to say as if. So that's what we get. So I know it will probably come in at some cost, but and it'll be booked that way. There really will be no effect. But I'll let the testifiers speak to that as well, if you have any additional information.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that, Senator Chamberlain. That offers clarity. They're already receiving this exemption. And so we understand the nature of fiscal notes. They're it'll come back with a cost actually to the Trunk Highway Fund. Okay, thank you for that clarification. Appreciate it. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Howe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say that Senator Chamberlain and I and Senator Dibble all serve on the tax committee, so we'll make sure we review the revenue note before it goes anywhere. With that, I'll move Senate File 2529 to be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Committee on Taxes.
Senator Hall moves that Senate File 2529 be as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Next up is Senator Hoffman with Senate File 1792. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today we have Senate File 1792. What this bill does is it removes three highways from the trunk highway system and turns them back over to the state or local state aid system. There's three sections to the bill. One refers to a highway in my district, legislative route number 227 from Nimrod to Sabika would be turned back to Wadena County. Legislative route number 258 from Comfrey to Trunk Highway 14 would be turned back to Brown County. And legislative route 291 in the city of Hastings would be turned back to the city. I did speak to my county commissioners. They agreed to it unanimously. I'm going to assume that Senator Sieben and Senator Dames did the same as they were co-authors on the bill, and I now can turn it over to the person that came and asked me to carry the bill, actually.
Mr. Jonas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The communities are in favor of assuming the jurisdiction of these three trunk highways, and there is negotiation ongoing between the MnDOT and the counties, in the case of Hastings, the city, to release the road to their jurisdiction, and a small construction project will be done with each of those projects as the jurisdiction changes hands. Committees are in favor. I stand for questions.
This is pretty routine. Every year we do some of these. So. Hastings is the only one that you don't have a complete agreement on as far as the amount of work.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I have a letter from Hastings, the city, in full support of the negotiations being completed, and they have actually programmed through our office a small overlay project for this summer, but all of the paperwork is not signed. These highways are mentioned in the statutes, and the negotiations can't be completed, and the jurisdiction change can't be take place until the statutes are amended to remove the names of these highways from the statutes. And that's the step we're taking today.
Thank you. Senator Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. I think we've talked last session about this a little bit, about when we do these turnbacks, you either pay the jurisdictions for 20 years worth of maintenance, or you bring it up to a standard where there's 20 years of maintenance. And one of the concerns I voiced was that we do that, and then the local authority could, in fact, turn around and assess adjoining property owners for improvements and things. And I'm just wondering, in your negotiations, what kind of language you put in there to protect the taxpayers or the adjacent property owners, that there's some assurance that we're not going to get in a situation where funds are being paid to the community, and then we're going to turn around and assess for a project for adjacent business owners or landowners, property owners, I should say.
Senator
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, the three projects for this year, the three highways that we're talking about, it is their request that minimal surface improvements be made to those roads at the time of release, and then they would take over the full responsibility for all future projects and all future maintenance as any other local road. So I don't think that type of a situation would occur. There has been some situations where we negotiate on a road, and the road is in pretty good shape right now, and it doesn't make sense to do the project. It should probably wait until the road deteriorates to a little bit further point before the work is done, especially if it's a reconstruction type activity. And yet there's a desire on the part of both parties, and these are all things that are negotiated locally between our MnDOT district offices and the county boards or city councils, and they want the jurisdiction to take place sooner for reasons of snow plowing or whatever, and so in that case there's usually a cash transaction at the time, and then that empowers the locals to do a future project at a future date. Unfortunately, MnDOT doesn't track what goes on, and county business on it just becomes county business on that and any other highway. I do understand that it could give the appearance that they're receiving revenue from two different sources for the same project if they would special assess, but one could look at that on almost any project out there as these multiple funding sources and special assessments are typically within the mix, and what is paying for what and what is fair at the local level is left in the decisions of the county boards and the city councils.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it speaks to the transparency issue. I know you do a great job on negotiating these things, and it's in the best interest of the state and the best interest of the local communities. I just want to be assured that the adjacent property owners along those routes understand what the process is, and that there's a full disclosure on it that, you know, if a cash settlement is paid for, that is for future maintenance or road work or reconstruction, whatever it is. I appreciate the conversation. I'm not sure that I feel exactly comfortable that it's not codified somewhere, that there's a notification process or that there is it just leaves it a little bit open, and I think we still need to examine a little bit, but I appreciate the work you've done on it.
Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair, if it's the appropriate time, I'd move that Senate File 1792 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 1792 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next up is Senator Decry. Senate File 1597. Senator Decry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Senate File 1597 is a bill that actually is for veterans. And we call it a veterans hiring preference bill, but we've all become aware of challenges that veterans, especially 9/11 veterans, are facing in finding work. Some reports suggest that the unemployment rates for post 9/11 vets is above 20%. Last fall, the Star Tribune ran an article highlighting the fact that 22.9% of recently returned vets don't have a job. Only Michigan and Indiana veterans have a tougher time finding a job. Clearly, the best way to get veterans back to work is through broad, sustained economic growth. As we work toward that goal, the state can help in other ways. We all recognize veterans possess skills beneficial to the workplace and our economy as a whole. Their experience, training, and leadership qualities are important to our state, and we must do more to make sure their skills are not left on the bench. In Senate File 1597, it includes a number of initiatives to help veterans get back to work, and this bill has been heard in the State Government and Veterans Committee already. but today I believe are focused on provisions that impact the Department of Transportation. I have an amendment, an A5 amendment, that I'd like to move.
For members' information, Article 1 and Article 2 of this bill were discussed in Senator Perry's Veterans Committee, and what we will be focusing on particularly is Article 3 of this bill. I think Senator Kreif, you did kind of allude to that.
Yes.
Comments.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing that up. This is an area, my bill separates and strengthens a veteran's preference for DOT contracting. The commissioner still has some discretion as to the percentage, up to 6%, but is compelled to award some preference, a must versus a may. The amendment improves the language of this section as worked out with the department and has passed recently in the House Transportation Committee. In the same article of the bill, Section 5, unaffected by the amendment, you will see that we provide authority for the commissioner to expedite the process for determining if a business is eligible for this preference. This authority is for 1 year and should shorten the time frame required for a business to be certified as eligible. Those are the pieces I would expect to be most interest to this party, and I stand for questions.
Okay. Senator Greif has moved the A5 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kreif, I don't think I missed this. I had to step out for a second. But I know we're trying to get at the unemployment rate for veterans. Do we have that number? Do you have any idea where that unemployment rate is? Because I know this would be a real benefit, and it is very high.
It's 20%.
It's Senator DeCray?
Well, as I said here in my report, it's above 20%.
Yeah.
is what some of the numbers are showing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I missed that. I just want to make sure for the record we underline that.
Yes.
Senator DeCray?
Yeah, if I might, I might also mention that I did just receive some information that that the language of this amendment, which was adopted by the House, is language that that we're understanding that that is the language that the DOT is in favor of over ours. So that's why this amendment was put forward.
Your testifier, Senator
yes.
DeCray?
Members of committee and Senator Gimmes?
Gimsey,
excuse me. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a combat disabled Vietnam veteran, and I'm also the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, which has 34 of the veteran service organizations in the state of Minnesota, representing the 300,000-plus veterans, National Guard reservists, and active military people who are coming back with the stand down and the having in the military with 100,000 people not being in the military, plus a 3,000 coming back this year. This is imperative to get this through. We have been working on this for 3 years with MnDOT and line by line talking with them to make sure that we're all together on the same page. One thing I'd like to mention is that there's no cost for the state of Minnesota to verify that these are veteran-owned businesses are certified, because the VA, that was a contention we had originally, that it was going to cost the state of Minnesota extra money to go out and verify that these men and women actually had 51% and they were financially stable and able to complete the projects. The VA itself does that, and so they need to be certified by the Veterans Administration to be a service-disabled, veteran-owned business, either a veteran-owned business or service-disabled, which then helps the state of Minnesota not have to go through that process. What we're trying to do here is give them a leg up on 20% of the projects in the state of Minnesota, because if a federal state project comes in, you have to go by the federal rules. It's the dollars worth of federal money in a Minnesota project, you have to go by the federal rules, and it kind of disassociates some veteran-owned businesses from getting a preference on federal contracts. Now, we're working on changing that, but that's another game. We believe that this is a great way for these young men and women coming back now to be able to get a set aside to bid on these projects. They're not going to be guaranteed they get the project. It's just that they're given a leg up for the sacrifices that they've made. They've left their home, they left their businesses, and they've sacrificed maybe their treasure and their bodies. We are a minority. We're 0.8% of the population. We have every ethnic and minority that there is in the world in the military. The women are an excellent part. And every minority that there is. So it's imperative that we get this done, and we appreciate the cooperation we've had with MnDOT to do the right thing. And I take any questions if you have them.
Questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony. We have another testifier from MnDOT. At least on our list, we do. Mr. Tettle. Mr. Tittle, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Briefly, I just wanted to mention that over the past few weeks, we've worked diligently with the House File 1821 on this bill, and a lot of effort has been put into this bill thus far. Unfortunately, there's an unintended consequence to that with lines 1.3, of the amendment that Senator DeCreef just passed out, and line 2.12, starting with 1.31, that the commissioner must award up to a 6% preference. As you heard Senator DeCreef mention in his testimony, that there's a challenge with a different bill in regards to that that MnDOT does not support at this time. So it's the agency's preference that they be similar or the same in reading, that the must language be changed to may.
We don't want that.
And so you're saying that the current House language is a may?
I am saying that the current House language is a must as well. As Senator DeCreef had mentioned, that MnDOT supports this bill, we do support this bill, the 1821 House bill. However, the must language is in conflict with what MnDOT agrees with.
Does MnDOT think that we as legislators are getting a little pushy or something here? Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not clear why, since they are given the flexibility on line 1.32 to go up to 6%. I think that gives them significant flexibility in this process. What is the reason?
Well, the reason
to tell them they have to do this.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The reason behind that is it's in conflict with a different bill, the TGF bill that's currently in the omnibus right now. It reflects that particular bill reflects a may language, which gives it preference over the TGF language.
Mr. Chair, could I have my testifier comment on this as well?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the DBE is a disadvantaged business enterprises and the targeted business groups, of which a veteran is. We're not competing for that business. 80% of those contracts of the MnDOT are DBE are the ones that get those. And we're just asking for just a little bit of a push above that we can compete on a better level with the 20% that the DBEs are also can bid on. We just want a little bit of extra emphasis that says that veterans have a stake in this too, and we just like a little better chance on getting it. We've been giving preferences to veterans from World War II, Korea, and we feel that this is an adequate thing to do now. The legislature chooses, when they wrote this up, to use shall, and I think it should stay that way.
Mr. Chair.
Well, council here has pointed out, too, that there are some other issues with the language. Again, Mr. Tittle, maybe you want to clarify it, but there's some confusion, at least on our part, about line point 1.34, the percentage of preference in the bid amount provided under this subdivision may not be less than the percentage of bid preference provided to any small targeted group business. It seems like that ends up being the floor, so that flexibility in the up to 6% may not actually be the case. Is that the way am I reading that language right?
Mr. Chair, I believe you are.
Okay, well, I can see why there would be
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if MnDOT could speak to any possible solutions that you have for this. What would be your preference on this or changes? Or are you just saying you're just opposed to the bill? I mean, you said you support it. Does the agency have any proposed solutions to this language here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howell, I am, well, first of all, for the record, my name is Alex Tittle. I'm the Deputy Director for the Office of Civil Rights at MnDOT. I will ultimately be responsible for administrating both of these programs, the TGB, as if passed, as well as the Veterans Program, as I currently am. What our intention as MnDOT is to administer both of these programs as equal. So the language reflecting the same for one another, meaning may for both bills, as it's already in the TGB.
Would it be appropriate for them to
further advice?
Mr. Chair?
I'm conflicted about this.
Mr. Chair?
Tell the truth. Senator Hall?
I'm just wondering if Senator DeKreif and MnDOT could maybe work on this for a few minutes, and we can move on to another bill and come back to it and discuss it.
Senator DeKreif, does that look like it might be a possibility? I know you've done a substantial amount of work on this. And
yes, Mr. Chair. I know I have the next bill up, too, so if you could go to the one after that, I'd be willing to take a couple of minutes to do that.
Senator DeKreif, yeah. Why don't we do that? Let's lay this bill on the table. See if you can't get this worked out and reduce some of the confusion for us. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble?
If I could just raise a couple of issues for Senator DeKreif to think about when we come back to this bill. One is I see that in the first section it talks about bringing a civil action, so I'm wondering if we're going to judiciary with this. That's on lines 1.17 to 1.23. And I don't have to answer now. It's kind of bookmarking for when we come back to this bill. And then on page 5, we have a purpose statement. Well, I don't have problems with purpose statements. I have yet to pass a bill that has kept my purpose statement in it. And in fact, the targeted group business bill that I had a purpose statement, which we took out because there's a philosophy, a reigning philosophy, that purpose statements don't belong in our statute books. We read the purpose of the language into the record for the purpose of establishing legislative intent. So I'm just wondering if we intend to keep the purpose statement in. Say good luck getting past Senator Fischbach if she sees it. And those are just the two things that to think about when we come back to the.
If I could address
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Section 1, uh-huh. We've already been to judiciary on that, so we've already been through that.
Oh, moment.
But the use.
Mr. Chair, is that not reflected in the route of the committee stops or go in a separate track? I'm just looking at the top of the
USERRA language. Give me just a minute, please.
We'll go ahead and we can work these things
right,
out.
Thank you.
Off the record, we'll go ahead and table this bill for the time being. And I'm not sure if Senator Stumpf is here. Sure he is.
I see. Okay,
good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and
Senator
committee.
Stumpf.
I have Senate File 1733. And there is an amendment that I'd like to offer, or I can't offer it, I'm sorry, but I'd like the committee to consider. And
we have an amendment number?
And Mr. Chairman and committee members,
Senator Stumpf.
The legislation relates to the first hall, which is closely tied to the movement of either around harvest time or the movement of that agricultural product from grain from either the field to the elevator or to from a bin that they've been that's on the farm to the elevator. So it's really the first haul provision that we're trying to work on. And the amendment, and I guess I would ask the change, a verbal change on line 1.2 of the amendment that we would delete the 75 and raise it to 100. And what's happening up in our area and across the western part of the state, and I was just visiting with someone about how the farming businesses have changed so much since the 80s when we had the farm crisis, which was a kind of a all-absorbing period in the legislature that dealt with farmers going out of business. And we had, back then, some moderately sized farms. But what has happened over the last number of years has been not only the growing size of farm operations, but also a much more rental of property, and some of that could be that the price of farmland has gone up, but a lot of farmers rent property not necessarily contiguous to where they're actually have their farmstead. And so the change in that first haul has grown quite a bit. And in our area, it's not unusual at all to have that first haul be twice or double what they would have had a number of years ago. So I have Mr. Clavin here to kind of give a little bit of an explanation of what that first haul really means and how it's interpreted.
Mr. Clavin, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bruce Clavin. I represent the Minnesota wheat growers today on this bill. Members, this was brought by some constituents up in Senator Stumpf's area. It started in the other body, made its way over here, and the members over there were responding to some issues that the constituents had up in the northwest there, and that is hauling farther, as Senator Stumpf described. If you look at the A1, I don't know if you've adopted it yet, but what the A1 does is guts pretty much the bill that was introduced. It takes away the search warrant changes. It takes away the 14-day look-back period change, and you're basically left with two things that this bill will do. And the first is raise the mileage on the first haul, which I'll explain in a minute. And the second thing it does is it puts some kind of a cap or a time limit on how long that takes the patrol to get the tickets sent to the truck owner in the mail. So the first issue, this first haul business, how it works. In our world, there are two ways to get an overweight ticket. The patrol will tell you there's actually three. It's the stationary scales like you'd see outside of Moorhead or over here in Hudson. We don't really deal with those very much. But there are two ways that impact us. First is the portable scales, and second is the ticket if you make it to the elevator or once you make it to the elevator. So I always like to use a semi as an example because the math is easy. A semi is legal at 80,000 pounds. If you leave your farm 1 pound over and you're pulled over by the patrol for an inspection and they put the portable scales on the side of the road and you're 1 pound over, you could get a ticket for being overweight on the spot. The first haul operates once you get to the elevator. The state patrol also has the authority to go in and pull the scale tickets. Within 14 days of delivery, they can go to the elevator and say, I'd like to see all your records, and they rifle through them and they look for ones that are overweight. If they do that through the elevator, they can only send a ticket to the truck owner if the weight is more than 10% over limit. In other words, 88,000. There's an allowance there, and if it's over 10%, the patrol can send a ticket in the mail. So the first haul is the first movement of the crop from the farm to the field to the elevator. What this bill does is increase the mileage. Now, when we were in the hearing on the other side, there was lots of talk by opposition about hauling 10% over all the time, everywhere, every load moved, and that's not what this bill does, because you always can get caught by the portable scales. You can always be overweight. So if you leave overweight over 80,000, you're always, I say at risk, but pick your word there. So if you make it to the elevator, it's how the ticket is used. And there was a lot of confusion in the House hearing about what this means. And it's about how the patrol can use the ticket. So it increased the mileage. The second thing it does, if you look in the amendment, is for the 60 days. I get calls from growers once in a while that get multiple tickets because they deliver over multiple days. And then they'll wait a couple, 3 months before the letter comes from the patrol that they're overweight. And so what we've tried to do here is put a time limit, some sort of time limit. The patrol told me their policy internally is 90 days. I have a ticket right now that's farmers contacted me on. The review was done in November. The discussion with patrol was done in December. He just got the ticket on the 15th, 4 months later. So this is an effort to try to get some movement if they're going to do it. I know they'll probably tell you that they have to wait for the truck owner to respond with the axle weight, and we recognize that, and that's why we thought 60 days might be a reasonable time frame. So that's essentially what our bill does in front of you, Mr. Chairman.
Now I'll go ahead and move the A1 amend.
Mr. Chairman, if
Senator Stone.
I think if on line three of the amendment, if we could put 100 in there versus the 75.
Line 2.
Pardon me?
I think it's 1.2.
It's 1.2 of the amendment.
1.2, I'm sorry.
So that would be delete the 75 and insert 100. And so we would move the A1 amendment as amended. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We have the bill in front of us. Any questions for testifiers? Senator Dibble?
Chair, we're going to hear from the department or either of the departments.
You're always just a step ahead, aren't you,
all right,
Senator
thanks.
Dibble? Very good. Thank you. We have two other testifiers, Captain Rogatsky from the State Patrol and Mr. Appetz. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tim Rogatsky. I'm the commander of the State Patrol Commercial Vehicle Section.
Captain Rogatsky.
I just received the amendment, the A1 amendment, and looking at it, I don't have any questions or concerns at this point, other than I wanted to clarify in the original amendment, lines 421 or 20, 422, 23, and 24. I wanted to make sure that that was not stricken from the bill, because that would eliminate our ability to go and look at weight slips.
So in the A1 amendment, we've rectified that.
And, yes.
So as far as the fiscal note then on this, do you have any comment about the $60 million federal highway potential loss?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't.
And I would assume then that part of this fiscal note applied to if you weren't able to do these checks. Okay, so that
that's correct.
Good, thank you.
And I could, if I could, Mr. Chair, comment on the 60-day element of this.
Certainly, Captain Radetzky.
Normally, an inspector or a trooper, when they go into a place that buys and sells commodities by weight, and they look at the weight slips from the just so the members of the committee understand how it works, we don't issue a ticket. A ticket is a criminal act. These are civil penalties that are assessed. And so when an inspector or trooper goes in, they look at weight slips and they find one that's grossly overweight. They will make a copy of that bill, that weight slip. By statute, the place of business has to indicate the license plate number or some way to identify the vehicle. So then we'll run a registration check, identify the vehicle owner, make contact with them, because we don't know if there's a violation until we do the investigation. And sometimes that takes a little bit longer. They may have a permit, there may be a permitted load, or there may be some sort of an exception that calls for that, so we don't know. And if the owner of the vehicle is out of town or on vacation for an extended period of time, it may, by our policy, we try to contact them 3 times before we would be forced to just file the case with the information that we have. And so I would like to continue our policy of 90 days, but we can live with the 60-day policy in fairness to the industry.
Senator Lohr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might have missed part of the fiscal note talk. I mean, there was two components. I was actually reading it as you were asking. There was two components to it. There was the $500,000 losses in your ability to collect the fines based on the checking the slips at the scales. That fiscal note would be gone under this. That cost would be removed with the adoption of the A1 amendment. Is that correct?
Captain Radetzky.
Yes, it would. The fiscal note was initially drawn up because we certify a size and weight plan to Federal Highway. And we looked at 160,000 weight slips last year. If we fail to do that, or if we are not able to look at weight slips, we would physically have to weigh that many trucks. If we fall short, or if we don't certify our weight plan, then we could be subject to the $60 million sanction.
Senator Lohr?
But, Mr. Chair, there was two parts. So that was the second part. There's the $60 million because of the certification issue. And I guess I'm hearing you say that goes away, too. But there was $500,000 in civil penalties collected that I guess you wouldn't be able to collect if you couldn't get to the scale, if you couldn't check the slips, too. So, I mean, those were two parts, and they're both removed. So you're able to collect the civil penalties as you used to, and the risk of losing the $60 million is also gone. So the A1 amendment, just to be entirely clear, takes care of all of the issues brought up in the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lohr, that is correct. I apologize. I misunderstood you the first time that you asked it. But yes, we will continue to do civil weight enforcement as we have.
Excellent. Thank you.
Let's see. We still have Mr. Appetz to testify. Thank you, Captain. Mr. Appitz, welcome to the
Mr. committee. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and we represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. And I can tell you at the start, this is the last place I want to sit right now, would be next to a gentleman like Mr. Stumpf, who's brought this forward. But I need to, because I needed to give you a little bit of history on first hauls and overweight trucks. And I think you need that to have a context for your decision on this particular bill. And to start out, I'm simply going to kind of set the tone by saying, here we go again. Here we go again. The first haul is an exception from weight limits. It is an exception from weight limits. It says that if you're overweight by 10%, you will not be cited if you're on the first haul. And the definition of a first haul is a haul that takes product from its, well, let's read the definition. The definition of first haul in the bill, in the law today, is the first continuous transportation of unprocessed or raw farm products from the place of production or on-farm storage site to any other location within, then it specifies the number of miles. Today it's 150 miles. Under the amendment you've adopted, it would be 100 miles to the place of production or on-site storage. And then it goes on to say, or the continuous or non-continuous, and this is important, continuous or non-continuous transportation of unfinished forest products from the place of production to the place of final processing or manufacture within 200 miles of the place of production. That one isn't necessarily applicable here, but understand that that's a part of the first haul definition as well. This gets a little confusing, but bear with me for just a minute. What we're talking about here is, as Mr. Clavin said, a weight limit of 80,000 pounds. We have an 80,000-pound weight limit on most of the highways in the state of Minnesota, and we have an 80,000-pound weight limit on all the federal highways in the state of Minnesota. In some states, they have exceptions for that, but in this state, you can't run a truck heavier than 80,000 pounds on the federal highways. Why is that? One basic reason. That's what the roads are designed to handle. They're designed to handle 80,000 pounds for X period of time, and that's what the repair schedule is based on. That's what, and if you put more weight on a truck on a highway, it reduces the life of that highway. It's a simple formula. It's a very simple formula. More weight means shorter life. More weight means more repairs. More weight means more cost to you, and you are the first line of defense in this issue. More cost to you in fixing up the highways. For my guys, the little railroads, more weight means less freight, less traffic on our lines, and that is another reason why we oppose it. I'd suggest that you take a close look at the bill that you just amended, because I'm not suggesting that Senator Stumpf will bring it, but you will see that bill again. And that seems to be a rather bold statement, but let me give you now, as I said, a little bit of history of this. Back in 2004, we made an exception. You made an exception. The legislature made an exception. Not most folks here, but the legislature made an exception to allow unfinished forest products to travel on highways. Where they had this first haul provision in here. And what is unfinished or raw forest product? Well, by definition, it's not exactly what you think. It is wood chips, paper, pulp, oriented strand board, laminated strand lumber, hardboard, treated lumber, untreated lumber, and barrel staves. That's unfinished products. That's unfinished forest products. That's what we did in 2004. In 2008, we also added raw or unfinished agricultural products. And raw or unfinished agricultural products have their own definition, which is...
I can't believe the barrel staves.
Hang with me. One quick second. Crops or livestock that basically go from the farm to the market. But we also amended that to say that it's equipment that's used for timber harvest. Now, it's not just this timber stuff. It's equipment that we use for timber harvest and gravel and other road building materials. So we changed the statute again to allow heavier trucks, first haul, to travel on the roads and impact the life of these roads. Subsequently, we added dairy trucks. Well, why not? Dairy trucks are bigger, heavier. They haul from one place to another. So we made an exception for dairy trucks, hauling milk, hauling cream. The exception then was followed by another exception, which allows you not just to take the dairy and cream from the farm to the processing facility, it allows you to take the cream, the butter, and the other products on your way back to the location where the truck came from to, what's the term used? Patrons on regular trips. I think that's the term that we use in the statute. My point is this, and I won't labor this, although I can, and I won't, just for all your sakes. Last year we dealt with an issue of aggregate, and we dealt with an issue of sweet corn. And we will deal with other issues. And that's why I suggest you should take a look at the bill that's before you that we just amended, because we're likely to see it again. Every time you make an exception, you put more weight on the roads, shorten the life of the roads, increase the cost of the repairs, and increase the impact that heavier trucks have on those roads. The solution is trucks that weigh 80,000 pounds traveling on our roads, or trucks that have an exception and pay for the exception. But just saying you get an exception because you might be overweight by 10%, which is 8,000 pounds, seems to be beyond what's necessary. Now, that's all about the roads.
Well, Mr. Apple.
Yes, sir. I apologize.
Let me just interrupt here. I guess I don't see any place in the bill where we are making an exception to increase the weight limits. Or the
That's
penalties
correct.
If in the event that the trucker gets stopped on the road over 80,000 pounds. And what we are dealing here with is the tickets at an elevator that are being looked at. And you know, you can call it possibly an exemption. That already exists, the 88,000 pound threshold already exists in current law. We aren't changing any of that. All we're changing is the distance. If I understand correctly, is probably your major concern. And, you know, whether it be milk or butter or cheese or these first haul agriculture products, do you have the capacity or the capability of getting that product from the field to the elevator where you will pick it up and move it on to its next destination?
Mr. Chairman.
I don't see the conflict here. I'm having trouble.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the question. I think staff has a couple of maps that I'd like to show you, if I could. Just hand those out to the folks who are here. You're right, Mr. Chairman. The exception currently in the law, and it is an exception, and it is in the law, and I just want to kind of bring you up to speed as to how we got to that 50 miles. Would now be amended to 100 miles. The bill originally said 150 miles, and I'm suggesting to you, you'll see 150 miles at some point in the future. I didn't have the, and I apologize to the to Senator Stumpf, I didn't have the privilege of viewing the amendment beforehand, so I just drew up some maps that if you take a look at, you can see what 150 miles means in terms of hauling stuff from the first haul to another location, to the location that it can be taken to. We're talking about the first map I show you is the railroads. If you just take a look at the railroads that I got here, this is the state railroad map, and it provides it gives you a picture of all the different railroads that are there. You go, Leroy. I'm sorry. All the different railroads that are in the state of Minnesota, and the X that I drew, that's the distance of 150 miles based on the legend on this map. Today it's 50 miles. It would be 100 miles under that, so it wouldn't be quite that. But there's plenty. If you look at the next map, and that's the green one here, this is the transmodal facilities, the terminals, the grain terminals that exist where these products can be hauled to. This doesn't include the 651 country elevators that are located all over the state. I don't have a map of those, but there's 651 of those. And what 150 miles does, Mr. Chairman and members, is allow you to travel a distance beyond the 50 miles you can now travel to 50%, again, as much under the amendment, you know, three times as much under the original bill, and essentially bypass a lot of the railroads that happen to run through those particular areas. What I'm suggesting to you is if you have larger trucks that can haul greater distance, Mr. Chairman, they're going to do that. And they're going to bypass.
That's understood. I guess maybe I'm still a little bit confused. You draw a line or a cross on the map of
yep.
great state of Minnesota at a fixed point. you move that point of, or the crosshairs of that X, if you will, all the way up into the northwest corner of the state, that you know, that very much changes this picture. You're talking about from that point, take that X and you move it up way up over into this corner. That changes the entire complexion of where and how far these loads are going. And again, committee, this is based off of 150 right. miles, not 100. So that would dramatically reduce the size of that X. But that's the X itself is a moving target.
Yes, sir.
And you understand that. Proceed, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a moving target. You can move the X any place you want, and you're going to run into, no matter where you put that X, unless you put it right in the middle of the boundary waters, you're going to run into a number of intermodal terminals that product can be hauled to within 150 miles on this particular thing. It would be, your bill says 100 miles, yeah? 100 miles, so it's a little bit on the side of that. You're going to bypass a variety of elevators, and you're going to bypass a bunch of smaller elevators that exist within the territories. And, I apologize for not having it on there. I couldn't find that particular map. But if they're allowed to travel those distances, Mr. Chairman, I think they will. And we've amended this law several times over to not only say raw timber and pulp, it's a whole variety of things, or raw ag products. Raw ag products are now butter and cream.
Mr. Abbott, this doesn't change any of existing law. All we are talking about is the distance traveled to the elevator. And
you know,
sometimes
true.
If you go an additional 10 miles or 20 miles, maybe Mr. Clavin or Senator Stumpf can help me, you can maybe get a dime more per bushel for a particular product. I think that if I was a farmer, I guess I would like to have that latitude to be able to make that call. Or, you know, I think there are a lot of different reasons. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the reasons, I guess, Mr. Appens, you said not to do this was the early degradation of highway life expectancy and the costs associated with that. And I'm going back to the fiscal note again. And they do make reference to, in their long-term fiscal considerations, the early degradation of highway life expectancy explicitly, but they didn't plug a number to it. I mean, so they considered it and didn't find the bill, even as originally drafted, worthy of tagging a fiscal estimate to. So, I mean, I don't know how much weight that argument really carries with us. We have a pretty good group of people that review these fiscal notes with a fine-tooth comb. And I think if those costs were real and identifiable, we would see them here, and we don't. And they didn't. Forget it, because they made, you know,
they did
make note of it.
And we aren't changing that. We aren't changing the weight requirements or any of those parameters in this, and that's probably why it had a zero. Senator Dibba.
Well, sure. I don't think Mr. Appitz entirely lacks a point here. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're opening up more roadway to these over limits, these first haul over limits. And it's not as if the first haul doesn't have an impact. It does. You know, if it's overweight, maybe we should just hear from MnDOT. I don't know if MnDOT is prepared to talk about this. We think there's going to be more impact to the roads or not. So, I mean, Mr. Appitz is absolutely right. We let these overweight exceptions, there's two or three or four, several every year. I think the very first bills I ever dealt with back in 2001 when I was in the House Transportation Committee was Muddy Carrots. And got my introduction to, the constant drip of trying to put ever more weight on our roads, at the same time complaining about the quality of our roads and
Senator,
their degradation
Senator
out in greater
Dibble,
Minnesota.
If you can show me where in either the amendment or the law where we're changing the actual weights that we're allowing to be carried on the roadway, I guess.
Sure, I don't think Mr. Appitz or anyone said that. I think the point is more roadway with these longer distances, so more roads will be opened up.
We will collect more in fuel taxes because those truckers will be paying that. And, anyhow,
Mr. Chairman, on the point that was raised and what you're talking about here, just take an example here. It's not just the elevators. You know, the map talks about the elevators. We've got a lot of specialty crops. For example, you farm 3 miles east of Moorhead, and you're going to raise sunflowers. The place you take the sunflowers is Dahlgren's up in Crookston. It's 75 miles away. So you get 3 miles off the township road, you get on Highway 75, and you drive north. It's 75 miles, and you take your sunflowers in, and you dump them. If I'm loading that truck, I'm going to be as close or under 80 as I possibly can because I got a long way to go where I could get pulled over on the portables. I get on the portables, and I'm 1,000 pounds over. I'm going to get a ticket on the highway. Or I could be. If I get up to Crookston and the patrol comes in a few days later and looks at it, if it's more than 10%, I get an allowance there. But that whole 75-mile drive, I could get weight on the portables. So the railroads aren't going to take my sunflowers from 3 miles east of Moorhead to Crookston and dump them for me. I'm going to take them myself. We've got other specialty crops. We've got a canola plant outside of Halleck. If you grow canola, you got to get to the plant from your farm. There's no rail line that's going to get from my farm to the canola plant outside of Halleck. We've got grass seed up in Williams. That's where the processing plant is. We've got seed potatoes. Seed potatoes have to get from the source to where the seeds are, where they're growing. So there's a number of things beyond just elevators here that can be impacted on the map that was handed out.
And under your scenario, Mr. Clavin, what do you do when you hit the 50-mile limit? You dump them on the side of the road and have somebody come and the next guy pick them up? I just fail to understand.
That's the second haul, then, though, I think.
Then it wouldn't matter. Anyhow, okay. Very good discussion. Mr. Peterson, you'd like to add something.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Peterson, the Office of Government Affairs at MnDOT, and I apologize I've missed most of the conversation. I was in the other room, but I gather from what I did hear that there is some question about the damage to the road caused by an extension of the first haul exemption from 50 to 100 miles. That's and MnDOT generally doesn't take a position on these kinds of bills in general because most state highways are built to a higher weight carrying capacity than local roads, and as such are better able to withstand heavier loads, in particular the 10% overweight that is referenced in this bill. And nevertheless, we do know from our research that when you get to weights that are over the design carrying capacity for a roadway, the damage to the road increases at an exponential rate. So it's not like a one-to-one trade-off where you have an extra 10% and as a result you can run 9 semis instead of 10 or 10 instead of 11 and incur the same amount of damage. But know that when you put 10% over on a truck, it does more than 10% in additional damage to the road. And I've been told that it's a factor of 4, so that means 40% more damage for that extra 10%. So that's what I'd have to offer on this point.
I think we understand that. That's why we're not increasing legally any of the weights, and we want our enforcement agencies to continue this process of checking the scales and the weight slips and having the portable scales out there so that 80,000 pounds is 80,000 pounds on our roads. We're not attempting to increase any of that. I don't.
Well, Mr. Chair, why do you keep ignoring the other factor, the distance? Mm-hmm. Keep talking about the weight. This has to do with the distance, the amount and the number of roads that will be open to the first haul. You have to talk about the factors that the bill speaks to. Weight is one factor. Distance is another.
Senator Dibble,
not even a part of the bill.
I worry about and think about the efficiency effects for our farmers and the ability to get their products the best way possible to the market and not having them have to be dumped on the side of the road because they hit an arbitrary 50-mile distance.
And that's fine, and that's a fair consideration, but, we're making a trade-off, Mr. Chair. We're making a trade-off, and you're acting like there is no change in the bill. There is a change in the bill. I mean, you have to accept that there's a change in the bill and not deny that there is one. That's fine. I respect your view. You know, it has to do with, how much people have to pay, but, then we all are going to pay more. Most of the money that's generated for the county roads is generated in the metro area, so we'll be donating more based on need to greater Minnesota. to repair the county road system.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, it's not very often that I've had an opportunity to agree with Senator Dibble. I'm going to take this opportunity today. Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, it does seem to me that we are talking about a doubling of potential burden to the highway system. And the reason, as has been testified to, the reason that we have weight limits is that damage can be done to the bridges, to the infrastructure, to the highway, to the roads that are there. And by doubling the distance, we're potentially doubling the damage, doubling the opportunity for damage to the infrastructure that is there. And Mr. Peterson testified to the fact that the state roads are built and the freeways are built to a level that can support the weight. Should we go above by 10% over the limits that are there? But I would also like to hear from the counties and townships. What happens when we go off of the state roads and go on to the county roads and the township roads? What happens to those if they are not built to that same structure level? And one other comment would be that my understanding is that the legislative auditor is working on a report to the legislature on overall weight limits for trucks, measurements, and enforcement that is due to the legislature next year. And perhaps prior to making this change, what appears to some to be a substantive change, perhaps we should wait for that report to come back to the legislature and make an overall review of all of these types of regulations.
Senator Gazelka.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to take this opportunity to be in disagreement with Senator Lilly, which I think is the first time. So I think it only makes sense that the farmer has this opportunity. And I think once you get off of or get onto the main road, I don't think your miles beyond that are very often. So you're on the, like, Highway 75, I think it is, the one that runs up there. You know, you're traveling a long distance on that road, but that road is capable. So I don't think you're going to have a lot of extra use, but I just wanted to say that to be in opposition to Senator Lilly.
Appreciate that. And as a rural legislator, I'm sure you understand the situation. Appreciate that. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I would like to do anything to help farmers and not take away business from the rail system, my question has to do with if we are doubling the distance that haulers can or trucks can go up to 10% higher in the weight restrictions, my question is to the DOT, does this pose any kind of threat to the roads and bridges? Is it a safety issue?
Just once again, we aren't authorizing or increasing the weight. The haulers are doing that at their own risk of getting ticketed either at the scale or on the highway itself. So that's not something that we're dealing with in this issue. I don't believe at all. I don't see that. But Mr. Peterson,
Senator Gimsey, and Senator Wolf, I don't know that the safety of the truck that's 10% overweight is the issue necessarily. I think the equipment, if it meets the specifications that it's supposed to, probably is reasonably capable of dealing with the extra weight.
Mr. Chair, the question isn't for the safety of the truck. The safety is the wear and tear on the roads and bridges.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wolf. It does accelerate the deterioration of roads and bridges. Over what would occur if the same number of vehicles passed over with legal weights. There's no question.
Mr. Peterson, that would be if we allowed the additional weights above the 80,000, which we are obviously not doing in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Question.
Senator Hall.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think... when we talk about the additional mileage, you're also having additional exposure. You can get stopped anywhere along the line, so there is a trade-off there. I mean, you say we're just looking at one side of it. I like to see that there's bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition to this, but you know, there is a certain amount of exposure there, and again, you know, I think the people, I shouldn't say the people, but the real problem ends up where we have people that have severely overloaded loads, and they're not taking it to a place that's going to weigh it at the end. They're just offloading it. Here's a situation where we've got people offloading, and we know what the weights are, and the State Patrol can go in and actually get those tickets, and they have an opportunity to go back and ticket these people. So, you know, this, I think, is a reasonable measure. They're at a greater exposure while they're going down the road. They're going to end up at a place where they're going to get weighed and they're going to get a ticket. I mean, where the ticket's going to be sitting there for anybody to come and look at it. And, you know, we talk about wear and tear on our bridges and our roads. You know, we've got people out there that absolutely do abuse our roads. And those loads aren't being weighed. There isn't a very few times where you can go by. You know, they're trying to bypass if there's a portable scale. They're on the radio or on the telephone or on the CB or whatever to avoid it. So I don't think that this particular expansion here is one that we should fret a lot about, because we do have measures in place to address it.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I do see that there are folks here from the townships. Could we ask them for feedback also, sir?
Mr. Vanosik, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Bob Vanosik, and I represent the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Our basic position on weight limits is that the decision on weight limits ought to reside with the local road authorities that are responsible for the roads that are under their jurisdiction. Our preference would be that existing law would not change. Having said that, the bill as amended is a substantial improvement to what the bill read when it was first introduced. As it relates to the extending the 50 to 100 mile from probably a local road standpoint, those trucks are most likely going to be on that local road in the first 50 miles. So, it's not as likely that they would go 50 miles on the state highway and then drive off on a local road for that additional allowance that's in the current bill as amended. One option to consider, perhaps, because we've heard about the distance, particularly up in northwestern Minnesota, is to have the bill limited to those counties up in the northwestern part of the state, as opposed to having the 100-mile limit apply statewide.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Mr. Vanosik.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanosik on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. And my members get real roiled up whenever they see any exemption to the weight limits. I'm not going to read you our policy position for the townships as I did in the House. But as was stated, this amended version of the bill is much more palatable than the original. However, you know, we would be much more comfortable if this was limited to the six counties up in the northwestern part of the state where this has been cited as a problem. We do, we don't like increased weight limits at all, but, you know, a lot of my folks also are do farm, and they do they're willing to find themselves and protect the roads because they do see the damage that when you get over, you know, it's that fine line where a little extra weight does exponentially more damage. So we do have concerns, but do want to say this amended language is significantly better than what was introduced.
Mr. Benosik, I would have the same concern if we were dealing with increased weight, but I just don't see that any place in this bill. Any further discussion on Senate file? Senator Sharon,
Thank you. I have a couple questions. In relationship to the rail, your concerns about the short line rail, is that correct that that's what you're speaking to, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, yes, besides the issues of the impact of extending this distance to the roads, I'm interested also in what you were talking about to understand a little more clearly the implications on the short line rail. I see a relationship when we talk about changing who can do what impacts each other's business. And I know that some of this is about protecting the business, but I also understand that the short lines need to have a certain amount of business in order to sustain their existence. And we want a short line rail system in the state of Minnesota. We don't want to do things in policy that we've done sometimes in healthcare, which is to allow certain profitable sections of healthcare to be bled off into outpatient clinics, leaving hospitals having to carry extensive costs and struggle staying open because of that. We want to sustain certain services and infrastructures in the state. And so I was wondering, Mr. Abbott, if you could talk about if that is of issue. And then the second question I have is the six county area a solution to the disagreement? And is it because in that area there are not rail systems that can provide the service to those parts of the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, and Mr. Chairman, try to be brief. Bottom line for my client, the regional short line railroads, that's the issue. I mean, if you extend the size and weight of trucks, you take freight off of the railroads and you put it on the highways. I mean, that, and while we're not extending the weight, but we are extending the distance. We're extending the distance that a heavier truck.
Mr. Abbott, we are not extending the size or the weights of any vehicles in this bill. Now let's get on to the real issue here.
Chair, he's stipulated that numerous times. He stipulated that. You keep repeating that. Everyone agrees with you. The issue is more roads will be opened up to higher weight vehicles.
Senator Dibble, when you have a testifier that is saying something that is not accurately represented in the bill, I think it is incumbent upon the chair to correct that.
Mr. Chair, you are stating something that is inaccurate. He is stating an accurate fact.
Well, Senator Dibble, he just got done saying the size and weight of the vehicles. That's not
already allowed for longer distances.
Mr. Abbott.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the distance that we're talking about here, I certainly will agree to that. We're talking about an added distance, and what you do is you allow a truck to travel a further distance, which is to Senator Sharon's point, it's the size of truck that's allowed under the statute today. And what we're doing is simply extending the distance it can travel, which means if there's an elevator here and an elevator here, it can bypass a couple of elevators and head on to another location. That means the local elevator likely won't see that product delivered there, which my railroads pick up and take to another location. And I understand the point about, Mr. Chairman, the point you made that maybe there's 10 cents better rate here when you go to another railroad than one here or another elevator than the local one. But you are creating, with this exception, the occasion to be able to do that. If that's the intent, that might be fine. But what I heard the intent was people not getting nailed over a longer distance that they want to haul some product. The simple solution to all of this is not all this commotion, but is to haul 80,000 pounds. That's what the roads allow. That's what the roads can handle. That's what we, the railroads, live with, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon. And the economics do shift when you allow a longer haul. I mean, even more so perhaps than with the distance if you allow a longer haul. So suffice it to say, I think that's a sufficient answer. I don't want to beat this into the ground or get off track, as they say.
Mr. Appetson, you know, a lot of these short lines carry refined products from the agricultural process, like ethanol. I think you've stated in the past that one of the customers of one of your very good short lines is hauling finished products. Wouldn't it be better for all involved, including the short lines, if they are able to reach out even further to get, say, the corn that they need from the field more than 50 miles away to process at that processing plant so they can produce more ethanol to put on your train to get to the market? It just, you know, I think we sometimes get so focused on the static aspects of things around here, and we just need to understand that free enterprise will continue to work, and if we allow our farmers to move their products to where they can get the best price, where they can have it processed furtherly, that things will continue to move in America and the great state of Minnesota. Mr. Clave.
Yeah, sure, Mr. Chairman. Quickly to respond to this terminal argument, if we had scales out in the field and we could load every load at 79.5, every single one of them, we can bypass these short line terminals all day long. This is about how you use the ticket once the patrol goes and finds it at the scale. We can bypass these terminals all day long right now. We can haul from Plummer. Senator Stump could take his truck from Plummer to Minneapolis right now if he gets a CDL. He can skip all the railroad terminals. So it's not a question about are we skipping short line railroads. It's how the ticket is used once you get to where you need to go. And one of the ironies here is part of why we have to haul all, or not in all cases like my sunflower example, but part of the irony here is the railroad stopped stopping in every town. And so we have to go farther now, too, because of the consolidation of the places you can deliver.
We've had a very good discussion, very thorough discussion on this. Senator Dibble.
We need to be clear, because you keep saying that Mr. Appice is saying something that's not true, and he has not yet said anything that's not true. The paragraph that's amended is this paragraph. I'll just read it. Clause 1 does not apply to the first haul of unprocessed or raw farm products or unfinished forest products when the registered gross weight is not exceeded by more than 10%. So the very issue to which he's speaking is about making an exception for overweight vehicles, for these first haul vehicles. That's what he's referring to. And the amendment, Senator Stump's amendment to the bill, extends the distance that they can travel from 50 to 75 miles. That is all that Mr. Appice has been testifying to. No one has claimed that somehow this is increasing the exception in terms of the weight. It's increasing the exception in terms of the exception that's already made in terms of the distance these trucks can go, which means more roads are opened up to overweight vehicles, which means more damage will be caused on the roads. That's the trade-off we're making. Now, you've made a good argument that that's a worthwhile trade-off in terms of the rural farm economy and getting product to market, and that's fine, and that's a decision you can make, but the fact is we're making a trade-off. And it's a choice in front of us, and we can come to different conclusions based on the facts.
Mr. Chair. Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I think it might be helpful to go back and Senator Dibble to look at the tape, because I think I heard somebody say we're expanding the size and weight, and I think that's the point you're addressing. We all understand we're talking about the distance here now, and I think that point has been belabored enough, but I appreciate your clarification on it.
Mr. Chair, I'm willing to move the bill as amended.
Thank you.
Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 1797
Did we adopt the amendment?
As amended, or 1733.
Did we adopt the amendment?
Wait. They do have a valid question. I'm not sure.
Did we ever adopt the amendment? I didn't remember doing that, but.
In the amendment.
Yeah, yes, I moved the amendment as verbally amended.
Yep.
We adopted that.
100 miles. I said 75, I meant 100.
The chair can't.
Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 1733, as amended, be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and all the members.
Senator DeKreif moves that we take Senate File 1597 off the table for discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Senator DeKreif, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did take a few minutes. We went in the other room and talked about several things, and something that that I hope we found is somewhat of a compromise is MnDOT had on page 5, you will see section 5, certification of qualified businesses. They had asked us to consider taking that that part out, and we concurred with that, taking that out. And in exchange for that, I'm asking MnDOT to work together with us on the language that they had some heartache over, the must. And my position on that is, in the state of Minnesota, our veterans are in a bad way right now. We have to give them some extra consideration, I think, wherever we can, in trying to get them working and get them employed when they're coming back from the theater. And so I am asking MnDOT to work together with us on that, on the must language.
All right, members, any discussion? Mr. Tittle from MnDOT, would you like to come up and testify to those points?
Mr. Chair, committee, I do want to concur with Senator DeKreif's statement that MnDOT does strongly support the preference bill, the veterans preference bill, and clearly recognize the need for its existence. We've also done some very unique things at MnDOT as to impart hiring a contractor to actually go out and market and outreach veteran and small business veteran-owned businesses out there currently. So we're working very diligently to ensure that this bill is as successful as possible. I also want to mention that I am a 10-year veteran and recognize the need for this bill, recognizing the understanding and clearly understand why and how veterans are struggling in this current market. I also must acknowledge the distinction between this bill and the TGB bill, and that the challenges that the perception of the preference brings to the minority and women stakeholders that we work with on a daily basis. At the same time, I wanted to remind everyone that we are in no way trying to stop this bill from moving forward. We do support it.
Thank you. Senator Kreif, what's your preference?
Mr. Chair, my preference would be that we move this Senate File 1597 to be recommended to pass as amended.
Well, which Senator means
removing
Kreif,
that Section 5.
All right. Let's work on the removing Section 5 then, Senator, Ms. Brzozowski, if you could help us with that.
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be on page 5 to delete Section 5 in Article 3.
Okay. Senator DeKreif moves to delete Section 5. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The section is deleted and adopted. All right, Senator DeKreif, to your bill.
Okay, then I would move to that I move Senate File 1571 to be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator DeKreif moves Senate File 1597 to be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. All right. You've got your next bill?
Yes, if we think we could go fairly quickly.
Sure.
Senate File 1293 is a bill that would allow private escorts to escort large loads in Minnesota. I'd like to offer an A2 delete everything amendment on this.
All right. Until that gets handed out, members.
While that's being handed out, could I move forward with my explanation, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
This bill would allow and promote the use of private pilot cars in Minnesota. Currently, when a company obtains an oversized overweight permit, in the provisions portion, the company is directed to hire peace officers when necessary. This bill would encourage the use of private, trained, licensed, and insured pilot car operators to escort these overdimensional loads. This would put Minnesota in line with most other states where these companies operate. There are times peace officers are necessary for the public safety, and I address this in the bill by giving the commissioner or local authorities the ability to specify them as necessary when transportation will involve lengthy traffic stoppages or other dangerous situations in their judgment.
Thank you, Senator Kreif. Is there anyone from MnDOT that would like to testify to this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Gene Halverson for MnDOT. We met with Senator Kreif this morning and have reviewed this amendment that he's offering, and we agree with this language. We think this meets the needs that we developed in the task force over the last year and a half.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Senator Kreif moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The A2 is adopted. Senator Kreif.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1293 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Any questions, members? Senator Kreif moves that Senate File 1293 be recommended to pass as amendment and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Perry. Now we'll move on to Senator Perry's 1310 bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got an oral author's amendment to kind of clean this up before we get started. Got a copy of the bill for me. Are you ready, Mr. Krasowski? Okay.
Right.
On line 1.10, after the word has, insert successfully. On line 1.21, after the I that's in parentheses, insert successfully. Those would be the two, Mr. Chair.
All right. You want to, Ms. Berzoski, you want to repeat that for us?
Mr. Chair and members, 1.10, after has, after the first has, insert successfully. And 1.21, after the I, in parentheses, insert successfully.
All right. Senator Perry moves that oral amendment to Senate File 1310. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's adopted. Senator Perry, to your bill.
One more oral amendment on line 2.1, after the word instruction, insert a period and delete the rest of line 2.1 and 2.2.
Berezovsky, you want to restate that?
Mr. Chair, after instruction, insert a semicolon and delete the language after the semicolon and delete the language on 2.2.
Senator Perry moves that amendment, oral amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's adopted. Senator Perry, to your
thank
bill.
You, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're here with Senate File 1310, which is working on some driver's licenses, modifying and clarifying provisions relating to instruction permits. And I do send wishes from Mr. Dewey Mettler, who really wanted to be here. I think he wanted to come to say hi to Senator Sharon because I think he's one of your constituents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. But in his place, we have Mr. Joe Christensen and Dr. John Palmer, who I'd like to have a couple of moments of testimony time here and talk a little bit about this bill.
Mr. Christensen.
Yes, I'm Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm representing the MTSE Legislative Committee. That's the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. That's the professional organization of the driver educators in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Christensen, just for the record, state your name. Also, thank you.
Joseph Christensen.
Thank you.
What the two issues here that are involved in this. First of all, the word successfully, currently under interpretations of the law, a student can sit in a classroom for 30 hours doing nothing, and teachers are required to fill out a certificate that they completed the class. So we are asking for the word successfully to be included in the law so that we can require the students to learn something in driver education. The second issue in here at the bottom of the page is concurrent driver education. Until about 12 years ago, a driver education program could offer 15 hours of classroom, have the students pick up a permit, and then do classroom and behind the wheel concurrently, switching one day doing classroom, the next day doing behind the wheel. About a dozen years ago, these two issues disappeared from the law, and we're asking that they be replaced.
All right. Dr. Palmer.
Yeah, my name is John Palmer. I am the Associate Provost for Organizational Development and Faculty Relations at St. Cloud State. But when I visited with the provost, who saw that I was at a legislative hearing today, I made it very clear that I was here because of my background in driver and traffic safety education. When I took the job, I told him that I would not abandon the subject area that brought me to the state of Minnesota in 1976 and has been my primary interest as an educator, as a researcher, and as an advocate. I would be remiss to not mention that Mr. Mettler is one of an elite group of teachers who have been recognized nationally as teachers of the year in their field, driver and traffic safety education, and so too is Mr. Christensen, a recipient of that award. I'm currently professionally involved as an editor for the professional publication, and I am past president of the American Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. I was honored to participate in a federal government-sponsored event that occurred in Scottsdale, Arizona, February of 2 years ago. And that was a meeting very unusual because all sectors of the driver ed industry were represented, and a consensus was reached as to what the standards for quality driver education would be. One of the standards that is there is something that Minnesota is unique in, and not in a positive way. Minnesota is the only jurisdiction in North America that prohibits by law best practice for instruction, that is, concurrent instruction. If you can imagine taking a chemistry class and being told you can't go into the chemistry lab until you finish the last element of classroom instruction, you can imagine what it is like then to teach someone to drive who has no driving experience, who cannot gain any driving experience, who cannot benefit from the blending of in-laboratory setting instruction with classroom. We're here today to ask you to put Minnesota in line with best practice by allowing, by allowing providers of driver education to choose to do this. This bill does not require it. It is only permissive. It would allow this practice to occur. With regard to the second word that was inserted, if someone could provide this to the senators, I have a copy of the listing of all of the required topics that must be taught in classroom driver education here in the state of Minnesota. They run from letter A to letter P. You can do the mathematics to figure that out. Most programs have 30 hours of instruction. It seems to me that if we require someone to receive instruction, we would require that they would demonstrate knowledge of what they have been taught. That's the reason we want the word successful in there. And one of the things that appalled me a number of years ago is that an administrative law judge said it didn't matter, that success was only defined by how many hours you sit in a seat. And I'm appalled by that. I'm appalled by the fact that we can't just do best practice. I know you just spent a great deal of time talking about an issue that's an important issue about the roads and highways in Minnesota. This is an issue that simply allows, if you go along with the bill and forward the bill, would allow the practice of best practice in teaching our young people to drive here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Palmer. Ms. McCormick, would you like to testify on behalf of the DPS on your concerns or support for the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services, and we support the amendment that Senator Perry offered on this bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to sort out the approval from the parent or the guardian or the foster parent. Kind of their I'm just not tracking this. But what I'm most curious about, I think I've figured it out, but the new language that says then, you know, small paragraph five, the foster parent or the director of the transitional living program which the child resides, blah, 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 if they have no living father, mother, or guardian. But I just want the answer to this question. Does that mean that if the child is in foster care but their mother or father is living, they have to go back to their mother or father, or does it not mean that because the foster parent is considered to be their guardian? I mean, I'm just worried that we're sending kids back to their biological parents when they're in foster care. They're usually in foster care for a pretty good reason. And I'm wondering if I'm misreading that.
Senator Perry.
Well, I was going to say thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. I guess when I read line 2.10, the guardian having custody of the minor, I think that's open enough to say if it's a foster parent that has custody at that time, that that's how I read it.
I think I read it the same, but
Ms. Brzozowski,
is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, if there is a guardian, it doesn't specify you know, guardian or foster parent, but if the foster parent were a guardian, then the foster parent could sign the application.
So, Senator Dibble. Family law here in Merton Transportation, but isn't a foster parent a guardian by definition?
Ms. Brzozowski.
I don't think so.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if that's always the case.
We'll figure it out. I am worried about that if we're creating that possibility. But
Mr. Chair, Senator, I know we're going to finance, and I'll get to you on that. We'll get a clarification.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions, Senator Sharon?
I really don't have a question. I just want to comment that I know that Dewey Mettler would have been here if the Mankato East basketball team had prevailed yesterday when they played Grand Rapids, but unfortunately they could not get a layup to drop down through that basket. So I did see him yesterday. He was up here yesterday.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1310 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Perry moves that Senate File 1310 be recommended to pass as amendment and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion to
Thank you, Mr.
Passes.
Chair.
Chair. Senator Dibble.
I will note that Washburn did win yesterday.
Seeing no further business to come in front of this committee, we will stand in adjournment until March 27, 2012.